The purpose of this presentation is to give you an introduction to the methodology used to evaluate protein quality and to briefly discuss potential health benefits associated with protein intake. So what I'll do is start off the session with quick overviews of protein structure and amino acid characteristics of dietary protein digestion, and then of protein requirements for, or human requirements for protein and amino acids. Next, I'll discuss the methodology used for determination of protein quality, and then lastly, briefly touch on other benefits associated with dietary protein consumption. All right. So what is the role of protein in the human body? There are structural components to muscle, primarily skeletal muscle, and it's also used to produce hormones, enzymes, hemoglobin, and other protein-containing structures. The structure of protein is basically a link, a chain link of amino acids that are pulled together with in a chain. The amino acids contain a carboxy carbon as well as amino nitrogen group attached to a central carbon. Also attached to that central carbon, you'll see here, is a functional group which basically differentiates each of the amino acids from another. Now there are 20 amino acids known to be incorporated into human proteins. 11 of those amino acids are non-essential, whereas 9 are considered essential. Now those 11 non-essential amino acids are on the left-hand side of your screen here. They can be synthesized by the human body, so there's no need to have them in the human diet. On the other hand, these 9 essential amino acids cannot be synthesized in the body and must be obtained through the diet. Now, the rest of this presentation will talk quite a bit about these essential amino acids in terms of understanding protein quality. So now if we look at types of protein and their protein qualities, you can see there are high quality proteins. We hear about that all the time. We need, you know, if we want to claim protein content on our labs, on our labels, we need to look at the quality of that protein. Now, high-quality proteins contain all the essential acid, all the essential amino acids at levels that meet human requirements, and we'll talk a little bit about, more about that in just a minute. They also need to be readily digestible. Some examples are both animal and vegetable protein sources, such as beef, poultry, fish, eggs, dairy proteins, as well as soy. Now, there are also other protein sources that are lower quality proteins, and these proteins don't contain all of the essential amino acids, or some of those essential amino acids are in the protein at lower levels than what's needed by the human body. These include vegetable sources like legumes, cereal grains, nuts, seeds, and vegetables. So, for instance, cereal grains are generally low in lysine and tryptophan, so they don't meet the human requirements for those two essential amino acids, whereas in legumes you see low essential amino acids, methionine and cysteine. Now there's a way to get around this lower quality protein. When you have these low quality proteins, you could either combine those with higher quality proteins, or you could do sort of a synergistic thing where you combine the lower quality proteins with certain essential amino acids that are low with other low quality proteins that have other essential amino acids that are low, and bring those together to bring up the essential amino acid content so it meets the human needs. We'll hear more about this later on. Now, when it comes to protein quality, it's important to use a method that accurately and precisely discriminates among different protein sources in meeting human needs. Now, quickly, how are proteins digested? Generally, they're digested in the stomach and the small intestines, and you can see pepsin, trypsin, and chymotrypsin break these amino acid chains in the middle of the chains, whereas in the small intestines you also have carboxypeptidase and aminopeptidase, and these enzymes basically chew off the amino acids at either end of the chain. This results in free amino acids, di, and tripeptides that are absorbed primarily in the upper portion of the small intestines. Now, something that's important and unique about proteins is that there are no body stores for protein like there are for fats and carbohydrates. So, for instance, dietary lipids can be broken down and stored in adipose tissue as triglycerides. Carbohydrates as well can be stored as glycogen in liver and in muscle, and even excess carbohydrates can be converted and stored in adipose tissue. Whereas with proteins, there is really no storage facility, so to speak, for dietary protein or for amino acids. So these proteins are metabolized immediately to the amino acids. Human protein tissues are continually degraded and resynthesized. This protein turnover occurs in about 3 to 4% of our whole body protein every day. And this generally occurs even more readily with fasting, exercise, aging, and disease. So, for instance, you consume a dietary protein, it's digested, and the amino acids are absorbed. Those amino acids are either incorporated into compounds such as hormones or enzymes, or incorporated into skeletal muscle and also excreted. Now, if you end up with, say, an extended fast, what happens is the skeletal muscle breaks down, and those amino acids that had been stored in the skeletal muscle are then sent out into the bloodstream to meet energy needs that may not be met by dietary consumption of foods because it is an extended fast, and the nitrogen is excreted in the urine. Also, those amino acids could then be incorporated into hormones and enzymes again. So now, how are human protein needs determined? Results from early nitrogen balance studies in humans and growth studies in rats examined protein and quality indicate that there are different and separate metabolic needs relative to tissue maintenance and tissue growth. So, for instance, as adults, we don't have much growing that we're doing anymore, at least as it's related to protein. Whereas a small child, an infant, a 2 to 5 year old child, even an adolescent, they're at different rates on the growth curve, and they're growing, so they have different essential amino acid needs than do adults. So if we look, for instance, at an example in a rat fed a corn diet, these rats are unable to maintain their weight and they die. Now, if you take that same corn diet and you add tryptophan to it, it allows for weight maintenance, but these young rats don't grow. If, on the other hand, you take that corn diet with tryptophan and add lysine, you find that the rat is provided with those essential amino acids that are needed not just for maintenance, but also for growth. So these studies that have been done early on identified differing amino acid requirements for body maintenance, body tissue maintenance, as well as body tissue growth. Now, daily protein consumption must maintain both the nitrogen and amino acid requirements through content of the essential amino acids, through the digestibility of the protein, as well as metabolism of those absorbed amino acids. Now, something to keep in mind, because we'll refer back to this as we go forward, is that there are different metabolic requirements for essential amino acids in humans compared to rodents. So, for instance, rodents need to maintain a higher amount of hair growth than, say, humans do. So they have a higher requirement for those sulfur-containing amino acids. So now, rodent studies have been used to assess the essential amino acid requirements during rapid tissue growth. So generally, studies done in rodents are usually done when they're very young and growing. This is not entirely relevant to humans, as I mentioned before. In rodents, there's a very high metabolic demand for rapid growth in early part of life, which requires greater need for those essential amino acids than what are found in humans. In humans, on the other hand, we have infancy that requires a very different a very different amount of amino acids, essential amino acids, and they're generally treated very separately than, say, the two through adulthood, two-year-old through adulthood. So we will not speak to infant nutrition at all during this session. The metabolic needs fall after that first year of life and then fall again after 4 to 6 years and into adulthood. The adult need for essential amino acids are primarily for maintenance rather than for growth, with the exception of exercise. Once you start exercising, you'll find that muscles begin to grow, and so there might be a need for certain essential amino acids for that muscle growth. So it may be possible that mixed plant protein diets without those animal proteins may actually meet adult essential amino acid needs. Now, the amino acid score is something that you'll hear about throughout the rest of this presentation as well, and it's the primary method used to look at protein quality in meeting the needs of humans. So if we look at the differences in amino acid, essential amino acid requirements across the age span, you'll see these are the essential amino acids that I listed earlier. These are the needs, and this is milligrams per gram of protein in 2 to 5 year old child, in a school age child, and in an adult. We'll talk about this last column in just a minute. And you'll see, for instance, with histidine, the need for histidine across the age span doesn't change that much. It's really not reduced that much. But on the other hand, if we look at leucine, you can see the requirement for leucine is much higher in the 2 to 5 year old child than it is in the school age child as well as the adult. So you see this reduction. Now, something that's not in here is the elderly, and there may be different amino acid requirements in the elderly, especially when it comes to conditions such as sarcopenia or sarcopenic obesity. Now, if we look at this last column, the reference amino acid score, you'll see that these amino acid requirements are exactly the same as those for the 2 to 5 year old child. And the reason for this is basically to meet the least common denominator. So in terms of human needs, the 2 to 5 year old child, excluding those needs of an infant, the 2 to 5 year old child are the highest. And that's what we base the human needs for these essential amino acids on. All right, so let's talk about four different ways to look at protein quality. This first way, this first method is called biological value, and it basically looks at nitrogen. So the amount of nitrogen from the protein retained and incorporated into tissue compared to the amount of nitrogen absorbed. This measures the efficiency of protein utilization. So how much of that protein is retained in the human tissue compared to how much is consumed. The biological value, and this is somewhat important, does not account for protein digestion. So those factors that I mentioned that may differentiate on protein digestion between different proteins isn't taken into account in terms of this this measure of protein quality. Also, essential amino acid content of the protein is not taken into account here. All we're looking at is the efficiency of protein utilization in the human. Now, this next method is called net protein utilization, and basically what it does is take the biological value and incorporate protein digestibility. So what you're looking at is these two measures in order to come up with the protein, net protein utilization. Now again, this has been done with nitrogen balance studies, which shows the difference in maintenance and growth on protein-free diets compared to the test protein diets. It's somewhat complicated to do in humans, but it's a little bit easier in rodents. And what they do is basically analyze nitrogen content of the carcasses once the animal's been on the diet for a couple of weeks. All right, so these two methods basically look at nitrogen content of the proteins. This next method, protein efficiency ratio, is based on the amino acid requirements, so those essential amino acid requirements, but in this case, of young growing rats. And if we look down here at the figure at the bottom of the slide, you can see there are differences, as I mentioned before, between the 2 to 5 year old child in yellow and the growing rat in red. So for instance, if we look at arginine, in terms of requiring this essential amino acid in the diet, there's a significantly higher requirement in that growing lab rat than there is in a human 2 to 5 year old child. On the other hand, if you look at leucine, there's a slightly higher requirement for the 2 to 5 year old child than there is in the growing rat. So this is something that we need to take into consideration when we use the protein quality methods and when you hear the speakers coming up after me. So basically, what happens here is the rat is fed the test protein as well as a non-protein containing diet, and you look at weight gain per gram of dietary protein consumed. And you can see this is where we start to differentiate between certain proteins. Here we have a wheat gluten compared to, say, a soy protein concentrate and an egg. And you can see a much smaller weight gain with that wheat gluten than, say, with the soy protein or the egg. And what that means is basically you're not feeding enough of the essential amino acids to help support the growth of that rat. This is a simple measure to do, but it, again, doesn't provide any information on protein digestibility. So we're not taking into account the factors that may reduce the digestibility of the protein. The use of this measure reflecting the amino acid needs of a growing rat may overestimate the protein quality for animal proteins and may actually underestimate the protein quality of some plant proteins. So now if we take this one step further where we incorporate the protein digestibility, you can see this is called PDCAS. Many of you may have heard of PDCAS. And this is protein digestibility corrected amino acid score. All right, and in this case, there are two factors that are needed. One is the amino acid score, which is, again, the essential amino acid content of the protein relative to that 2 to 5 year old child, and the digestibility of the protein. Digestibility being the difference between the nitrogen ingested and the nitrogen found in the feces. And it's expressed as a percentage. 1.0 is considered to be the highest required score for determining protein quality. So although there are some proteins, dairy proteins, for instance, that might have scores that are above 1.0, maybe 1.1, 1.18, 1.0 is the maximum score, and the reason for that is because it meets the needs, the essential amino acid needs for that 2 to 5 year old child. So anything above that would mean you're getting certain amino acids in excess. Not a problem, it's just that what we're looking at here is making sure we meet the needs, the protein needs of that 2 to 5 year old child. So all the essential amino acids are available for utilization at the required levels in order to get this 1.0 measure. So now digestibility. The amino acid score is important in determining human need for essential amino acids, but the digestibility of the protein is important as well. Not all proteins are digested, absorbed, and used to the same extent. Differences exist in the nature of the protein, so for instance, protein configuration or the amino acid bonding. And also, there are differences in terms of the presence of non-protein constituents that might modify digestion, so fiber, phytates, tannins, those kind of things. The PDCAS actually uses what's called the true digestibility. So what the case is here is that, yes, the difference between the nitrogen ingested and the nitrogen found in the feces is used, but it's corrected for a factor that considers the fact that we lose nitrogen on a regular basis. So what it takes into account is if you're on a protein-free diet or a protein diet that just meets the need of that individual, that you're also losing some nitrogen. So it corrects the digestibility for that loss of nitrogen. So if we look at all these measures that I just spoke of, you can see that the amino acid score varies. And here we have wheat gluten, beef protein, soy protein, casein whey, and egg protein. You can see they're ranked according to their amino acid score. The protein digestibility for most of these proteins are similar, 98, 99, slightly lower for soy protein concentrate, a little bit lower for wheat gluten, but fairly good digestibility. When you look at the PDCAS, on the other hand, you'll see that although the amino acid scores might have been higher with egg and whey protein, they all equalize at 1.0 for the PDCAS. You can see beef protein is slightly lower. There's actually methionine is the limiting amino acid in beef protein, but we eat enough of it to make up for that. So when you go out and have that T-bone steak or whatever, it's not generally a portion size, but it may be a portion size times two. So we don't have to worry about the quality of our protein when we're eating our steak. And wheat gluten, you can see 0.25 PDCAS score is rather low. PER, protein efficiency ratio, you can see there's a range that is found. Again, this is based on the amino acid requirements, the essential amino acid requirements of a growing young rat, and then biological value of variability here as well. So then just a little bit about protein balance. We are all in protein balance when we maintain our protein stores. In other words, we're eating as much protein as we're using. The WHO recommends 10 to 15% of energy be taken in as protein, and that's generally accepted as about 0.8 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight per day. Positive protein balance, on the other hand, is when we're increasing our protein stores. So we're taking in more protein than we're utilizing within our body. In this case, if we increase our protein intake and we increase physical activity, you'll see that we'll be increasing our protein stores. Negative protein balance is when we see a reduction in protein stores. In this case, generally, you're taking in less protein than what your body needs. And you saw in that earlier diagram, you start to lose those skeletal muscle protein stores. This often happens with exercise if you're not consuming enough protein, as well as with aging and disease. So some benefits beyond meeting our nutritional needs. You probably all know that that protein provides energy at 4 calories per gram. That's the same as with carbohydrates, although protein has a slightly higher energy density at 9 kilocalories per gram. The protein is needed for growth when we're young, as well as maintenance, so repair of our cells in the body for substances such as enzymes, hormones, and then other tissues in the body. Protein is involved in skeletal support. Protein has a potential role in both satiety and satiation. So satiating effect of the macronutrients, protein more satiating than carbohydrates, which is more satiating than fats. Protein contained in a meal may lead to satiation or ending that meal sooner than if protein wasn't included in that meal. And also protein may prolong satiety, so it may delay the start of that next meal. And then lastly, protein or the specific amino acids may help to maintain muscle mass, potentially maintaining higher metabolic rate, particularly with aging as well as weight loss. So quickly, summary, protein quality is based on the need for tissue growth and maintenance. and there are separate needs there. A number of methods for evaluating the quality of food proteins have been used over the years. Protein digestibility corrected amino acid score is a more accurate method for evaluating the quality of food proteins to meet human needs. Most individuals require 10 to 15% of their energy to come from protein. And most people in developed countries meet their protein requirements. And then lastly, there are benefits to dietary protein consumption beyond meeting our general protein needs of growth and tissue maintenance. Questions? Very good. Clear.